Blog Talk Radio.
Joe the plumber in Tent City, Mr. President, if I could ask you one simple question, is how could you make Timothy Guyton ahead of the Treasury?
You know what, never mind, I get it. You don't even have to say, you're just a spokesman, right? Same snake, new face,
and the Hope for Change campaign. Seriously, that was clever, cause hope is just a word, and you're the best lie ever.
That's 16 months, and start bringing him back, but you haven't, you've expanded, now you're trying to pass a draft. You said you cared about our families, but now it's clear to see that you don't give a fuck about us. All you care about is Walt,
not peace, not dreams, certainly not me, but I don't see you as my chief. You're just a white-collar thief, another Tavistock production, trilateral connection, a Bilderberg commercial, and Kissinger's little messenger.
I heard you with Kennedy, yes, I'm thinking more like Mussolini with the youth brigades and stars.
Yeah, just call him now, see him, Mr. Yes We Can, Yes We Can, Yes We Can, what? I just got one more question here, Obama, where you taking?
He was a righteous man, that's all the people invite this man, to make newer policies, the same laws they never will see. Except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Yeah, a black man in a white place, yo, the Uncle Tom of my space, yeah. Yo, I'm glad I went and said it, I'll say it and I'll say it loud, yo, fuck the president. No sucker boo, this silly cat's trying to rob you.
Yo, say what, yo, what you mean he trying to get us? An intelligent black man, I think you're jealous.
Yo, sucker, please go do your research. The Big New and Kissinger were his teachers.
Yo, why you gotta go and hate on a brother? You know that's what they want us to do to each other.
Yo, true that, but the truth takes precedence. All anyone can really do is weigh the evidence.
And if you can't see the Wall Street cronies claiming all the turf for themselves and they homies, then you about to get jacked for your home. When you out on the street and you can't get a loan, and catch you thinking, would you do it again, give your vote to a black man just because he said he was a righteous man?
That's all the people invite this man to make newer policies. Same laws you never will see, except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Oh, no, you're not a righteous man, no, no. Oh, no, you're not a righteous man, no.
All right, here we go. Oh, okay. I'm having some technical difficulties. All right. There we go. Back in business now. All right. I'm not sure what that was. I think it's one of these windows I have open. I've been having that problem all day today. And Stay Mad will attest to that. I have a couple of open windows here on a couple of websites, and they are, they come up with this, these advertisements, and I hear them all the time. I've been hearing them all day today. I think this one is from the Fox News window I have open here. Yep, sure is. Fox News. Time to cut the cake. Fox News advertisement here. Giving me their... Yep, there we go again. I've been having this problem all day long, folks. Lots and lots and lots of advertisements. Here it goes. Oh, Holland America. Well, I love Holland America too, but I don't really want to hear it right now. But, you know, hey, thanks a lot, Holland America. You're all right. All right. I prefer Prince's Cruise Line. All right. Let's get this party started. 10, 10, 11. That's right. October 11th. October 11th, 2000, no, October 10th, 2011, A.D., beautiful old town Alexandria, Virginia, United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Whew, man, got that out of the way. I think those commercials threw me off. All right, let's get this party started. We got a mess on our hands, and it is hilarious. I tell you, these folks out in New York and now in Atlanta and springing up over a dozen more cities is hilarious. Earlier this morning, I was watching Fox and Friends, and apparently this beatnik, this bum, this hippie, is wanted in several states for robberies and such. Nothing violent. And he said to the camera that he's in New York, and he thought that he's really not part of the whole Occupy. Occupy Wall Street crowd, but he thought it would be a good place to hide. He said he thought it would be a good place to hide. And he's just kind of smoking some weed and just kind of hanging out and doing his thing, and it's all good. That's what he said. He said he's there just hanging out doing his thing. And I found the whole thing to be hilarious, because now he's not hiding anymore. He's not hiding at all. He's pretty much out in the open. And New York's finest is probably going to be making their way toward him in pretty short order. And I thought the whole thing was completely and utterly hilarious. So that's just one of the stories that we're going to talk about tonight. But hey, here's what I want to get into right about now. The Democrats are now getting involved in the demonstrations and saying that they support the demonstrators. How long before this whole thing turns on them and bites them in the butt? There's going to be violence at some point. It's going to get out of hand. The violence so far has been pretty tame. But now it's really going to get out of hand pretty soon. So why are these folks getting involved? Do they think that what they're really doing is going to change anything? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think what we have here is a complete mess. That's what I think. So I don't know. I think I'm having another commercial. I think I'm going to have to close out one of these windows here, because I got another commercial going on in my ear. Stay Mad, you know we've been doing this all day long, because he's been on the phone with me. And we've been doing this all day long. I've got my blog talk page up so I can monitor another show. And I'm hearing stuff in the background. I love the free market just as much as anybody, but right now I'd like for you to take a listen to what I have going on right here and now. Who's been calling for Marxism? Who's been calling for Marxism? The folks in D.C.? The folks in New York? The people in Atlanta? All over the United States, there is a call for Marxism. For socialism. We read the manifesto the other day. We got that out of the way. And right now, we've got a call for Marxism. For socialism. They've come out in the open. And who's to account for this? Do you remember when Marxism, socialism, communism was they were dirty words? Remember when these folks were like on the fringes? They were in the fringes. They were hiding out. Not many folks wanted to come out and say that they were socialist, that they were Marxist. Not many people wanted to come out and say that. Now, hey, it's no big deal. They're coming out of the closet. Because our president is a socialist. Our president is a Marxist. And he's hired people on his staff, people in his cabinet who are like-minded. When the president of the United States said that he wanted to fundamentally transform the United States of America, this is what he was talking about. Americans pitted against Americans, the rich against the poor. Now, a lot of us watch from afar and then we say, hey, you know what? Those rich should pay more. But how soon before it gets down to you and me? How soon before we're being asked to go work in a factory to support somebody else? How soon before the time comes when we're not working for each other? We're not working for ourselves, for our families, but we're working for other people. Take a listen. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
I think when you spread the wealth around, it's good for everybody.
And that any health care funding plan that is just, equitable, civilized, and humane must redistribute wealth from the richer among us to the poorer and the less fortunate. Excellent health care is by definition redistributional.
Are you then calling for the redistribution of wealth in society?
Absolutely, without any hesitation. That's what the gospel is all about.
And then the third lesson and tip actually comes from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other, but the two people that I turn to most.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun.
Workers of the world unite. It's not just a slogan anymore. It's the way we're going to have to do our work.
I think the debate for the new generation, instead of capitalism or socialism, is we're going to have both, and then which proportion of each should we have in order to make this all work? It's a much more sensible debate.
But the dream was not to put one black family in the White House. The dream was to make everything equal in everybody's house.
If what you mean by economic equality is floors for everybody and ceilings for everybody, well, floors, absolutely. Ceilings, probably. You have the consumption tax. Certainly a consumption ceiling. Great.
Because we have been guided by a Republican administration who believes in this simplistic notion that people who have wealth are entitled to keep it, and they have an antipathy towards the means of redistributing wealth.
You stayed up front. Your starting point is, quote, no-nonsense Marxism, unquote. But you dispel all the negative images we have been programmed to conjure up with just the mention of that word socialism or Marxism.
The wealthy are getting way, way too wealthy, and the middle income class is left behind.
When it gets out of whack, as it did in the 20s and it has now, you need to do some redistribution. This is a form of redistribution.
Definitely.
If you redistribute too much, then the system doesn't work because you take the incentive out of it.
No more broken treaties. No more broken treaties. Give them the wealth. Give them the wealth. Give them the dignity. Give them the respect.
The rich are not paying their fair share in any nation.
And guess what this liberal will be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing. Would be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
We're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. You know, during the 2008 presidential election, Barack Obama promised to lead the most transparent administration in U.S. history. And unfortunately for America, for the American people, he's failed to deliver on his promise. The Obama administration has approached its governing responsibilities as follows. Isolate a problem, proclaim an urgent need to address it, propose legislation, and then try to ram it through Congress before people have a chance to read it or to appreciate the exact effect that it'll have on this country. We already know that the president's signature accomplishment, the sweeping changes to the nation's healthcare system, known familiarly as Obamacare, is not working out as advertised. During the debate leading up to the bill, the president promised over and over and over again that anyone who liked the healthcare insurance he already had would be able to keep it, and that the premiums would fall more than $2,500 for an average family. That's what he promised. Under the new law, we now know both to be proven false. Premiums increased by 9% in the first year of Obamacare, and more than 1 million Americans already have lost coverage that they wanted to keep. Now, these effects of Obamacare could have been more precisely determined, disseminated, and avoided if the president hadn't rushed the bill through without transparency or the necessary time for the founders' vision of a highly deliberative process. Remember when Obama said, the time for debate is over. The time for debate is over. It is time to act now. Now, I believe that he wanted to act now because he knew that his signature healthcare legislation would be unpopular and that he would lose seats in Congress. So why not get these unpopular things out now? Now, the most recent example, and there are plenty to choose from, is the approach he's taken with the American Jobs Act, which he argues is needed to get America back to work. So he wants Congress to pass it now. Now, without any debate, pass the bill now. Pass the bill now. Pass the bill now. It's needed now. As he repeats it over and over and over again like a broken record. Without the public having had an adequate chance to look it over, most Americans are unaware, for example, that there is a provision in the proposed bill that would create a new cause of action, allowing people to sue a prospective employer if they believe they were turned down for a position because they were unemployed at the time they applied for the job. Such a law, if it were to go into effect, would be a welcome boom for the nation's trial lawyers. We all know that. But would be a looming liability over anyone seeking to hire new employees, such as myself. The cost of litigation, never mind the potential financial judgments, would be enough to make any business, small or large, fearful of hiring anyone. So what sense does that make? Least of all, this would affect the more than 9% of Americans who, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, don't have a job but are looking for one? Talk about unintended consequences. This president is either a genius or a complete moron. I argue that he is often one and more often the other. Now, the same urgent approach was applied to the administration and its green energy agenda, which accounted for little more than shoveling money out the door to companies operating commercial activities of which it approved. I myself should have gotten into this green gig and gotten myself some free money for nothing. But I was not raised that way. Everyone now knows about Solyndra, the politically well-connected California-based solar company that got $500 million in loan guarantees from the U.S. Department of Energy, no less, only to go belly up just a couple of years later, leaving more than 1,100 workers unemployed. Any serious due diligence involved there? No, it now seems clear, would have suggested that the company was not a good place for an investment backed by U.S. taxpayers. But here, once again, we have the government picking winners and losers, and often picking only losers. The government should not be in this business. The government should not be in the business of picking winners and losers or picking anything. The only real job our government has is seeing that we're well protected as a nation. It is not what I am so clear that the founding fathers did not intend was for the government to be go in the business of creating jobs. Now, for the last 3 years, I've heard we need to find a way to create jobs, that the government should create jobs, that it should be about creating jobs. Since when should the United States government be in the business of creating jobs? Have we already become a socialist, Marxist, nearly communist country where the government has taken on the role of employer for the whole country, that the government should be in the business of creating jobs and taking responsibility for creating jobs? This is not the country I grew up in. The United States of America, our government should not be in this business. And now we have a whole generation of young people who will now grow to expect that if they can't find a job, that it is the government's responsibility to create jobs. And with that, I'd like to put out here Mr. Andrew Calvin's very serious commentary on this matter. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report here on Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Andrew Clavin, and this is my very serious commentary. President Barack Obama is pushing a second massive economic stimulus package, which differs in outline from his first massive economic stimulus package by coming second and by being called a jobs bill. The first stimulus package cost $830 billion in taxpayer dollars, and Vice President Joe Biden said it succeeded beyond his wildest dreams, which are about a 50-foot-tall naked woman who crushes American businesses under her stiletto heels while screaming Joe is a very naughty boy. The theory behind the new jobs bill is simple. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi has explained that unemployment insurance is, quote, one of the biggest stimuluses to our economy. In the wake of Obama's first stimulus bill, 2 million more Americans have been put out of work, thus pumping the economy chock full of those refreshing unemployment checks. Since the new bill costs about half as much as the first, we should be able to look forward to yet another million new jobless coming to America's economic rescue by collecting yet more unemployment. Some Americans feel this economic theory, first developed by French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte, or some guy who thought he was Napoleon Bonaparte, doesn't go far enough. These Americans, sometimes called leftists or buffoons, feel that the Obama administration should draft even more stimulus bills and continue to spend money we don't have until New York Times columnist Paul Krugman finally admits he was just kidding around about that and then impales himself on a ceremonial Japanese sword. Other Americans could not be reached for comment because they were attempting to paddle an inner tube to Cuba in search of economic opportunity. There's another important difference between Obama's first stimulus package and his new jobs bill. The original $830 billion stimulus was never paid for, thus supersizing America's already out-of-control debt and exacerbating the current debt crisis, which Obama says is the Republicans' fault because they haven't. The new $450 billion plan, however, will be paid for, Obama says, by taxing the rich. Contacted in their tax haven in the Cayman Islands, the rich said that was simply a fabulous idea, darling, and we should give them a ting-a-ling-o when the administration was over when they might agree to come home and start hiring people. All in all, since Obama has become president, unemployment has steadily increased, the debt has skyrocketed, the deficit has quadrupled, and millions of people have descended from the middle class into poverty, which is good news. More people out of work and in poverty means more unemployment and welfare checks, which will be spent on buying products from rich people who can then be taxed more until they too must collect unemployment and welfare checks. Once everybody's out of work and poor, we'll all be rich. Is this a great administration or what? I'm Andrew Klavan, and this has been my very serious commentary.
Andrew Klavan, who works for, or works rather with, Glenn Beck. And I was given permission to use this commentary, and so I did. And doesn't it make so much sense? What we have here is failure to communicate. President Obama says that the reason why his first stimulus failed was that he did not communicate or explain his goals well enough. That he should have explained to the American people that the recovery would take quite a bit longer, and that there would be quite a bit of suffering before there would be any real gains made. He admitted that his communication was lacking, and that he wasn't clear, and that he never should have said that unemployment would lower and that life would be groovy. So it's not his policies that have failed, he says. He says it's his communication skills. He didn't communicate well enough. Now, rejection, I'm here to tell you right now. Rejection is no fun. And especially if you're a heavenly rock star with a savior complex, when people with narcissistic personalities come into psychotherapy, they often complain that nobody loves them and that they can't understand it, because aren't they just the most lovable, most beautiful, nicest person in the world? This is not Harry Truman. It's not Herman Cain. No. It's a guy who loves being worshipped. And he can't accept it when the crowd stop cheering. Narcissists are not nice. They treat others as puppets on strings. The rest of us get drawn in by their superficial charm. And then after a while, we figure out that we've all been had. Just as soon as we walk away, the result is a towering rage by the narcissist. We all know someone like that. We all know someone like that. Now, I'm told that this is all routine psychiatric manual stuff. If you can handle a little bit more, President Obama is an interesting mix of narcissism and oppositional defiant disorder. No other president in history has actually given his fellow Americans the fickle finger of fate in public, to the cheers and applause of his own followers. This is not Thomas Jefferson, nor is it Abe Lincoln. This is immature kid stuff. So here we are. Our moronic mediocrats have gotten America stuck with a man who was never tested by adversity. Unlike Herman Cain, for example, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, and other GOP candidates, he isn't used to scraping his knees on the playground and then just getting up. Go pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start all over again. Hell, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers sang Pick Yourself Up in the 1936 hit Swing Time. Jerome Kern and Dorothy Fielding, the writers. That was the depth of the Great Depression. Pick yourself up. It is the song of an ordinary American who tackles the hard jobs, which is why it was so popular. It's still a great song. America doesn't sing Pick Yourself Up anymore. All we sing is, I'm a victim. My parents didn't love me. I don't want to pick myself up, dust myself off, and start all over again. Help me. Give me free money. Give me free things. Give me a living wage. Give me $20 an hour, a minimum wage. Give me your stuff. The rich are too rich. You owe me. I shouldn't have to work for it. Tens of millions of kids have been raised by moms without dads. And they're mommified. They expect fulsome flattery just to get out of bed in the morning. Remember when we were kids? It wasn't like that. If you doubt that, check out the photos of the thousands of rich kids with the Apple iPad sitting on Wall Street, trying to figure out what they're supposed to be protesting. The, quote, days of rage, end quote, are really the days of narcissistic rage. These kids are as phony and self-indulgent as the Obey Me administration. If you don't adore them for giving us the finger, there's something wrong with you. And why aren't you paying for their health care for the rest of their lives? Why aren't we giving them everything? Why? We owe it to them. Those of us who have punched all the tickets and worked all our lives and done good things, done the right things, we are now to be penalized and punished for success. Which brings me back to my favorite author, Ayn Rand. Well, she's not my favorite author, but she's pretty much up there. Ayn Rand had an interview with Mike Wallace many years ago, and she talked about this very thing. She talked exactly about what we're seeing here today, the looters, the takers. She talked about what's happening today, here and now, how we have young people protesting, people who produce, the producers, the wealthy. Are they taking advantage of someone else? No. No, they're not. They punched their tickets. They did what they needed to do. They lived the American dream, which any one of us can. Like Herman Cain said, don't blame the rich if you're not rich. Blame yourselves. And I quite agree. Why is it that we have people in this world who want what you have, but are not willing to work for it? In most terms, we call these people criminals. They want to take what you have because for some reason or another, they couldn't get it the normal way. They dropped out of high school. They dropped out of college. They went to work somewhere in a dead-end job, and they're pretty much bitter that they can't get where they want to go. And they see you or me driving down the road in a nice car, a beautiful woman, some groceries, some pasta, headed off to parts unknown. And they envy that. But instead of saying, hey, I want that, I want to be like that, they say, no, this person got to where they got by stealing it from me, from people like me. I could have had that, but this person took it. They stole it. So I want it. I want what is due me, and I want it now. Because I should have had all of this. I should have had what he has, or what she has, or what they have. You know, when I was a kid, I used to watch Dallas, J.R. Ewing, and Jock Ewing, and Miss Ellie. I watched the Colbys. I watched Falcon Crest. I watched Blake Carrington. I watched all the shows where the folks were dressed for dinner. They were rich. They were powerful. They were business people. They were landowners. When they would sit around a table, they were always sitting in a family group, and they were always finely dressed, driving the fanciest cars. My favorite line, JR telling somebody that he was going to destroy him. He wasn't talking about killing anybody or stabbing anybody. He was going to ruin them financially and send them on their way. Watching those shows as a child, I wanted to be those people. I wanted to be like those people. I wanted what they had. Not by taking, not by stealing, not by robbing, not by changing the system so that what these people earned, they would have to give to me. No, I wanted to earn my way, because in those series, Jock Ewing, well, he pretty much swindled, his partner's land. But hey, he worked, so maybe he's not a good example. But for the most part, the characters in those television shows of my youth worked very hard to earn what they had. I wanted those things, but not once did I say, "Damn those rich people! I wish I could have those things that they have. I want those things. They shouldn't have those things. They earn their money off the backs of other people." I didn't think like that. I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be wealthy. And later on, I gave up that dream. I decided I was going to be a Marine. And I didn't know how long I was going to be a Marine. I signed up for a three-year contract. 3 years active and 3 years reserve. Eventually, after about 6 months, I decided that there was nothing else I wanted to do. So I stayed a Marine for 30 years. And it was great. Then after leaving the Marine Corps, I decided I wanted to start my own businesses. And I did. And I'm doing pretty good. Certainly no Bill Gates. Hell, I mean, I'm not even the richest kid on my block, the man on my block in my neighborhood but I'm doing okay. And as I said many times, I've driven down the road in my four-year-old Nissan Maxima and pulled up next to a Rolls Royce or a Maserati or any one of the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 cars that are driving around here in Alexandria, Virginia. I don't look at those cars and say, wow, how did he get that car? He must have swindled somebody out of it. I'm happy. I'm happy with what I have. And I'm happy that whoever's driving that ride is driving that ride. And often I resist the urge to ask the person to roll down their window and ask if they have any Grey Poupon. Sometimes I want to do that, but I'm happy. But here we have a group of people in this country who are not happy. They want what you have, and they don't have the guts to pull a gun and rob for it. They don't have the balls to just up and take it. So they look to the government to take what someone else has and give it to them. Redistribution of wealth. These are lazy, no good bums. Lazy all their lives. Hanging out in front of Wall Street with iPads, iPhones, going across to the Dunkin' Donut. You know, the only inconvenience is that they don't shower and bathe and brush your teeth, which is probably something they didn't do on a regular basis anyway. What are they protesting? Most of them don't even know. They're smoking weed and having a great time. Ayn Rand was absolutely right. And I'm going to play a clip of Ayn Rand's part one interview with Mike Wallace, and you tell me if you don't agree. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. And we'll be right back.
I'm not an emotional impression. Is that your impression?
No. Mike Wallace, Ayn Rand, 225-1.
I've practiced it all my life.
I have not. I'm curious. Coming up with the same outcome.
This is Mike Wallace with another television portrait from our gallery of colorful people. Throughout the United States, small pockets of intellectuals have become involved in a new and unusual philosophy which would seem to strike at the very roots of our society. The fountainhead of this philosophy is a novelist, Ayn Rand, whose two major works, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, have been bestsellers. We'll try to find out more about her revolutionary creed and about Miss Rand herself in just a moment. And now to our story. Down through history, various political and philosophical movements have sprung up, but most of them have died. Some, however, like democracy or communism, take hold and affect the entire world. Here in the United States, perhaps the most challenging and unusual new philosophy has been forged by a novelist, Ayn Rand. Miss Rand's point of view is still comparatively unknown in America, but if it ever did take hold, it would revolutionize our lives. And Ayn, to begin with, I wonder if I can ask you to capsulize. I know this is difficult. Can I ask you to capsulize your philosophy? What is Randism?
First of all, I do not call it randism, and I don't like that name. Call it objectivism.
All right.
Meaning a philosophy based on objective reality. Now, let me explain it as briefly as I can. First, my philosophy is based on the concept that reality exists as an objective absolute, that man's mind, reason, is his means of perceiving it, and that man needs a rational morality. I am primarily the creator of a new code of morality which has so far been believed impossible, namely a morality not based on faith.
On faith.
Not on faith, not on arbitrary whim, not on emotion, not on arbitrary edict, mystical or social, but on reason, a morality which can be proved by means of logic, which can be demonstrated to be true and necessary.
All right, all right.
Now, may I define what my morality is?
All right.
Because this is merely an introduction. My morality is based on man's life as a standard of value. And since man's mind is his basic means of survival, I hold that if man wants to live on earth and to live as a human being, he has to hold reason as an absolute, by which I mean that he has to hold reason as his only guide to action, and that he must live by the independent judgment of his own mind, that his highest moral purpose is the achievement of his own happiness, and that he must not force other people nor accept their right to force him, that each man must live as an end in himself and follow his own rational self-interest.
May I interrupt now?
You may.
Because you put this philosophy to work in your novel Atlas Shrugged.
That's right.
You demonstrate it in human terms in your novel Atlas Shrugged. And let me start by quoting from a review of this novel Atlas Shrugged that appeared in Newsweek. It said that you are out to destroy almost every edifice in the contemporary American way of life, our Judeo-Christian religion, our modified government-regulated capitalism, our rule by the majority will. Other reviews have said that you scorn churches and the concept of God. Are these accurate criticisms?
Yes. I agree with the facts, but not the estimate of this criticism. Namely, if I am challenging the base of all these institutions, I'm challenging the moral code of altruism, the precept that man's moral duty is to live for others, that man must sacrifice himself to others, which is the present-day morality.
What do you mean by sacrifice himself for others? This, now we're getting to the point.
One moment. Since I'm challenging the base, I necessarily would challenge the institutions you named, which are a result of that morality.
All right.
And now what is self-sacrifice?
Yes, what is self-sacrifice? You say that you do not like the altruism by which we live. You like a certain kind of Ayn Randist selfishness.
I would say that I don't like is too weak a word. I consider it evil. And self-sacrifice is the precept that man needs to serve others in order to justify his existence, that his moral duty is to serve others. That is what most people believe today.
Well, yes, we're taught to feel concerned for our fellow man, to feel responsible for his welfare, to feel that we are, as religious people might put it, children under God and responsible one for the other. Now, why do you rebel? What's wrong with this philosophy?
But that is what, in fact, makes man a sacrificial animal, that man must work for others, concern himself with others, or be responsible for them. That is the role of a sacrificial object. I say that man is entitled to his own happiness and that he must achieve it himself, but that he cannot demand that others give up their lives to make him happy. Nor should he wish to sacrifice himself for the happiness of others. I hold that man should have self-esteem.
And cannot man have self-esteem if he loves his fellow man? What's wrong with loving your fellow man? Christ, every important moral leader in man's history, has taught us that we should love one another. Why, then, is this kind of love, in your mind, immoral?
It is immoral if it is a love placed above oneself. It is more than immoral. It's impossible. Because when you are asked to love everybody indiscriminately, that is, to love people without any standard, to love them regardless of the fact of whether they have any value or virtue, you are asked to love nobody.
But in a sense, in your book, you talk about love as if it were a business deal of some kind. Isn't the essence of love that it is above self-interest?
Well, let me make it concrete for you. What would it mean to have love above self-interest? It would mean, for instance, that a husband would tell his wife, if he were moral, according to the conventional morality, that I am marrying you just for your own sake. I have no personal interest in it, but I am so unselfish that I am marrying you only for your own good.
Well, should husbands and wives
tally
up?
Would any woman like that?
Should husbands and wives, I'm tally up at the end of the day and say, well, now, wait a minute. I love her if she's done enough for me today, or she loves me if I have properly performed my functions.
No, you misunderstood me. That is not how love should be treated. I agree with you that it should be treated like a business deal, but every business has to have its own terms and its own kind of currency. And in love, the currency is virtue. You love people not for what you do for them or what they do for you. You love them for the values, the virtues which they have achieved in their own character. You don't love causelessly. You don't love everybody indiscriminately. You love only those who deserve it.
And then if a man is weak or a woman is weak, then he is beyond love?
He certainly does not deserve it. He certainly is beyond. He can always correct it. Man has free will. If a man wants love, he should correct his weaknesses or his flaws, and he may deserve it. But he cannot expect the unearned, neither in love nor in money, in matter nor spirit.
You have lived in our world, and you recognize the fallibility of human beings. There are very few of us, then, in this world, by your standards, who are worthy of love.
Unfortunately, yes, very few. But it is open to everybody to make themselves worthy of it, and that is all that my morality offers them.
If they will
conduct a way to make themselves worthy of love, although that's not the primary motive.
Let's move ahead.
All right, and we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Ayn Rand said it best. Self-interest. Self-interest. Steve Jobs passed away recently, just a couple of days ago. Al Davis passed away the day after that. These were men who had no interest other than their own self-interest. Steve Jobs wanted to create something that would allow him to become immortal, as it were, that would change the world. It was a form of narcissism. It was self-interest. He did not want to create the personal computer so that people would have a personal computer. He wanted to do it because he thought it was cool. It was a cool thing to do. That was what he liked. He wanted to do it, and he wanted to do it for himself, not for you and me. Now, I use Mac computers. I'm sitting in front of three of them right here and now. Steve Jobs did not create Apple computers for me. He did it because he loved that sort of thing. That's what he wanted to do. It was all about him. And as a result of it being all about him, I benefit from that, which is great. Al Davis was all about self-interest. It was all about him. He rose from a scout, a college scout, a professional football scout, to assistant coach, to head coach, to managing owner and general partner. General partner and managing owner. Not sure which one it is. He did it because that's what he wanted to do. It was all about him and him and him alone. Later on, it became about him and him and some of the players, but mostly it was about him. And so we got Al Davis, and we got the Raiders, a legend. When you do things for yourself, because that's what you want to do, you benefit other people. I did not spend all the time I spent as a Marine because I wanted to give service to my country. I know it sounds good. I wanted to serve my country. And even now, I feel a little bit embarrassed when people say, thank you for your service. Because quite frankly, I enjoyed every minute of it. And I suspect that if I hadn't joined the Marine Corps, March 13, 1979, at the tender age of 17, not even completing my senior year of high school, never going to the prom, I probably would have wound up dropping out of high school and becoming a criminal. And I'd probably be in prison right now or dead. The Marine Corps was not about serving my country. It was pretty much the only thing I thought I could do. And it turns out I was pretty successful at it. I was good at it. So yeah, you can say thank you for your service, and I do appreciate it, because I understand where the sentiment is coming from. But frankly, I did it because I loved it. It's the only reason why a guy like me sticks with one thing for just over 30 years. I did it because I loved it. It was all about me. It wasn't about my country. And then leaving the Marine Corps and starting the various businesses that I started and becoming successful at those businesses was not about feeding my family, because they're all pretty much adults. It wasn't about anything but me. It's what I wanted to do. And now others benefit from that. And that's great. And that's how it should be. My life shouldn't be about living for someone else. I don't live for anybody else. I live for me. I don't work for anybody else. I work for me. Even if I work for another company or person, I'm doing it for me. And everything that results from that is beneficial to other people, but it starts with me. That's what Ayn Rand was talking about. That's what I'm talking about. So you people out in New York protesting to get something for nothing, saying that you demand, you're just a bunch of losers who probably will wind up professors in some jerkwater college, some third-tier school, or just a bunch of bums living off your mama and living in her basement for the next 10 years before she finally kicks you out. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I want to thank everybody for coming in, all the guests I bribed and cajoled into guesting in my chat room, all my listeners, Beach Bomb, Evil Clown, 2020 was in the house, ABCCDDDAEFG, Stay Mad Radio, everybody. Thank you for coming here. It's on to football now. You guys are great. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. And Ayn Rand, we love you wherever you are.
When you walk in the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. about Jesus' mighty sword, and they shield you with their wings, and keep you close to the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation, for his hands are so cold. You gotta help me keep the devil way down in the hole. 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 You gotta help me keep the devil down.